Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another episode of the podcast. My name is Lewis and joining me to discuss an unfortunate end to Sale's European adventure is my co-host Alex. Alex, coming to you obviously off the back of Sale's 41-22 point defeat to Racing 92 on Sunday afternoon. How are you?
Not quite as frustrated as I was on Sunday. Still disappointed, still very proud of the performance, and still frustrated enough to have to need you to cut me off if I start ranting too much.
Yeah.
Probably a fair summary. How are you?
Yeah, very well. A little bit sick of hearing about French TV directors, but I'm sure we'll touch upon that later on. Maybe you'll actually touch upon it thinking about it. I saw some of your tweets on Sunday afternoon. But I think, first of all, I just wanted to give a bit of a shout-out to the Sale fans who were at the La Défense Arena on Sunday, who I just thought were absolutely fantastic and a really good showing of kind of what the club is about, what the club supporters are about. You know, I was watching it on television, and they were audible in terms of the support they were giving to the team. You know, you could hear them even when the actual ground itself was loud. You know, this wasn't just the case of, oh, we scored a try and there's no one in the home crowd saying anything, and you could hear the Sale fans. You could hear them throughout the game, and I thought they were absolutely fantastic and a testament, really, to what a sort of vociferous support that the club does have. So credit to everyone, and I hope everyone had a fantastic time in Paris, because it looked absolutely mint. Not just being in Paris, but obviously being in that arena specifically, and the bar on the pitch afterwards. But obviously, Alex, neither you or I were there on Sunday. So I guess, kind of watching from afar, what was your sort of feelings, you know, come the final whistle? You know, Sale obviously beaten by probably the better team on the day, but ultimately, you know, a really valiant effort from the team, and certainly one I think we could be proud of.
Yeah, 100%, and completely agree with you on hearing our fans in that much voice is just spectacular, isn't it? And completely out shouted and out sung and out cheered the Racing fans for pretty well all of the game, to be honest. Yeah, to hear that, I know we've only got about two chants, but even still, to hear them on the telly is just fantastic, especially with the game being on Channel 4 in the UK, obviously. So yeah, that was superb. And full-time thoughts were just very gutted that it turned out the way it did. I thought the result was slightly unfair to Sale in the end. I do agree that probably Racing were the better team over the 80. I think we had such an incredible first half. The intensity, the execution, the physicality. You know, we dominated them in the scrum. And this is with, you know, still areas of our game that weren't performing at top level. You know, the line-out was struggling a little bit. There was still some inaccuracies. But the defensive system we employed really troubled Racing in that first half. And they couldn't work it out. And I think the half-time came and they obviously regrouped and worked out a plan of kind of how to get around that using the talents of Finn Russell. And I think the combination of them trying that and us sort of, you know, naturally falling off into intensity a bit, you can't keep up the intensity we had in the first half of the 80 minutes, just created the space for them to run into and you know, ultimately, they kept 15 men on the field all game, and as a result, they were in good shape in the last 20 minutes to really hurt us, because for most of that game, we were in touch. And I think the Sale of old, once Racing went ahead, I would have thought, oh, we're out of this. But actually, I think we showed a real level of mentality to come back and score against them again. You know, both times we scored, we were trying to keep ourselves in touch. Now, ultimately, we never fully turned it around, but I do think there's a lot of encouragement to be taken in that. And I think, you know, it's just one of those, what would have happened if Racing had had the two yellow cards, or even potentially reds, but probably two yellow cards that they should have had, in all fairness. I'm not saying it would have changed the course of the game. And it's just a bit of frustration that because of the 19-point gap at the end of the game, which kind of came about as, you know, as a result of the way the game broke up, it won't be talked about as much as maybe it would have if we'd stayed in touch. But yeah, I think the result was fair. It was a brilliant performance. The fans were brilliant. And it gives us a lot to build on for next season. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the sort of players who drove that, well, some of the players who drove that performance might not be there next season. So that's another thing to consider. But yeah, there's definitely a load of positives to take, but also a tinge of frustration and disappointment at kind of full time, as I suppose you would expect.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. I think there's so many positives to take from that game. I think in the first half, you know, we deserved to go in ahead, 10-6 at the break. The defensive structure that we had was fantastic. We were really troubling Racing. You know, we were getting up in their faces, putting a lot of pressure on them, and it worked, you know. And up front, I thought we fronted up incredibly well. You know, the physicality, the playing the loose, tackling, ball carrying, etc. was fantastic. I thought, you know, John O'Ross had probably his best game for 2 or 3 years for Sale, especially in that regard. And the scrum obviously went fantastic. You know, Bevan Rod did a number on Gomez Sarr, you know, in that first half. You know, Nick Schoner had a really good showing as well, probably his best game in the Sale shirt. You know, and I think realistically, we probably did enough to hang in there. I think what we probably see in the second half is just that little bit of X factor. Well, not just little, but there's a lot of it in that Racing team that really sort of broke the game open. And realistically, that's why they won by 19 points. With the best will in the world, we don't necessarily have the players who can do what a Finn Russell or a Teddy Tomar can do. But then again, not a lot of teams in the world have that, you know. And realistically, they score two incredible tries, wonder tries, if you want to call them that. And that's ultimately the difference. You know, the 19-point, you know, margin of victory definitely flatters Racing. And I thought, realistically, we went as well as we could have. And, you know, I know Alex Sanderson has been talking about it a little bit over the last couple of days, but this is what you expect when you have a team like Sale who are operating on a $6.5 million salary cap going up against a team like Racing who are operating on a $10 million salary cap. That there is going to be that gap. And I think it's quite telling that three of the four semi-finalists in this year's competition are French. The other team is basically the Irish national team. You know, there are always going to be these discrepancies. And I think realistically, given everything that we had up against us, I think we did as well as we could have. Before we get onto some of the more controversial stuff, those two tries from Russell and Teddy Thomas, I mean, if you ever wanted an encapsulation of what Racing are about, it's that, isn't it? That little bit of game-breaking skill, the execution, the poise, all the rest of it. And it kind of felt like that. It was those two moments of magic that kind of unlocked Sale for the first time. And do you think it's fair to say that was the difference on the day?
I think those moments of magic themselves were probably the difference. I'm not, you know, those specific moments, I think, were well built by Racing in other areas. You know, I think their defence, their kick chase was superb. That really troubled us, which kind of drives the kick back to Finn Russell, and then he gets the very lucky bounce, and that's, you know, if you keep trying things, they will come off. So I think that really... that grew Russell's confidence. But I think the Teddy Thomas try was actually more kind of indicative of the way they were trying to play, which is that, you know, they were giving the ball to Russell, but then they weren't passing it along the line because they knew that we were getting up into that 12-13 channel really quickly. They were using Finn Russell's boot to get it out wide quickly where the space was. So, and you saw that with the Thomas try. And the thing that Finn Russell can do is he can assess what kind of kick to make. Sometimes it was in the air, and that one was more... kind of kept it low and introduced the element of uncertainty with the bounce that just went, you know, into Thomas' hands. And the skill to execute that and, you know, drop it on the foot is just that you're going to have moments of magic like that in the game. And to be honest, I think our performance was such that we, if we'd not conceded the other tries, those two moments of magic wouldn't have really mattered as much. And you know it's going to happen, and it's very hard to defend against. So you don't try and plan to defend against it. I just think they kept knocking at the door, and they kept finding that space on the outside in the second half that they hadn't been able to in the first half. And that Tomah try especially was a massive example of it. And kind of reward for, I would say, them working out a different way to play against us. I mean, the encouraging thing for us has to be that there's only one Finn Russell, and there aren't really many other players in the world who play that style and can do that. You know, one of the other ones is probably George Board and Marcus Smith to an extent. But, you know, there aren't a lot who are going to be able to do that to us in the league and in Europe, even at that level. So I think we have to take encouragement from that. But, yeah, I think the way Racing set up in the second half was our downfall. And as I say, just our intensity wasn't able to be at the same level. And it comes back to your point that, you know, when we roll Gus Waugh off the bench and Sam James and Jack Metcalf, who are academy products, we, you know, because of the makeup of our squad, that is what it's going to be like as an English club. And, you know, Racing are rolling off Maxime Machinot, who is a massively experienced European level player. It just highlights that difference. And I think Alex Sanderson's probably caught some unfair flack for answering a question when someone said, do you think the salary cap made a difference? And he said yes. And it's kind of been presented as, oh, Alex Sanderson complains about the salary cap making a difference. But you are right that look at the comparative squad depth. And the point is that we probably performed as virtually as well as we could in that game, but factors were against us, and we relied on Racing having a worse game than they did, and some 50-50 calls, which I think genuinely, even if trying to look at it in the most neutral terms, 50-50 calls which went against us, then you're not going to make up that gap. Whereas in the league, it's been an underperformance that has caused our league position in those games. In this game, I think we did everything really we could have expected, and yeah, ultimately the chance element of it didn't go our way.
Should we talk about those sort of 50-50 calls then? Because I mean, rightly so, there is a lot of, or there has been a lot of talk about, you know, calls that were or weren't made. And I think the one that maybe, well, there's probably two that stand out. The first is the Teddy Tomah try. You know, his foot is, if he's not in touch, it is as close as you are ever going to get to that. And genuinely watching it live, I did think it was out. But, you know, the referee the TMO makes the decision against that. So that's, you know, that is what it is. I guess maybe the one that's getting a lot of attention is actually right at the start of the game, where Camille Schaap throws a big hit and probably part of his shoulder into Dan Dupria. Where did you fall on that one, Alex?
Well, yeah, basically for me, on the Teddy Tomah one, the ref called it as not in touch in field of play. The TMO didn't have any clear evidence to overturn it. It's really frustrating, and fair play to my dad. He was sitting on the sofa going, well, if Cueto was in touch in 2007, then that's in touch. Which, you know, there's an argument to be made. But no, I think that one I struggled to... I understand it, that, but that is a genuine 50-50 call that doesn't go our way. So that is one area where I think all the angles are made available. The TMO looked at it, and there wasn't clear evidence to overturn the on-field decision. That's fine with me. The two that I think are massively, massively frustrating, one of which you mentioned is the Dan Dupria hit, and then the second of which is the Tom Curry head collision, are blatant head contact that, with everything that's going on with player safety in the Premiership, and say what you want about the standard of the reffing in the Premiership, there's a very, very good process there where they are looked at. The replay's brought up, the TMO says, right, we need to review this. They review it, and a decision is made based on force, whether the player's balling, any mitigation, whether there's foul play, whether there's head contact or neck contact to the head or neck area. None of that happened, and that's the frustrating thing, because it's not a 50-50 call. That it should have gone through a process and then made its 50-50 call. But actually, if you look at them both, there's head contact in both. Should be minimum a penalty. One of them got a penalty, which was the Tom Curry one. One didn't, which was the Dan Dupreeh one. Actually, it was a penalty for Rassing. And both should have been yellow cards, and it could have been red cards. I think in both cases they were players were falling, so they would have been yellows. But the problem with those is they're not 50-50 decisions. They're decisions that weren't available to be made by the refereeing team, because fundamentally, either the angles weren't made available to them, or the TMO has looked at it and decided it's not worthy of review. In either case, it is completely wrong, and it's genuinely just a stain on the European competition. And I'm getting into that rant that I said I wouldn't get into, but I can't understand why it's not reviewed, because it's, you know, we can talk about the 50-50 calls, which Teddy Tomorrow has won, and there's other, you know, penalties, and well, we can talk about them until the cows come home. But fundamentally, if we don't review things that could result in penalties and yellow cards that are reviewed week in, week out in the Premiership, then how is our team supposed to prepare for a game where the standard of refereeing is completely different to that they experience week in, week out? And, you know, it's not like rugby is a massively international game with different leagues and different tendencies. There's four big leagues in the world, really. And it shouldn't be that hard to get a standard of reffing, especially in Europe, across the channel, which is broadly similar to that in the English Premiership. Because to me, that process is World Rugby's process. So it won't be looked at because it's Sale have lost the game by a number of points, because it happens week in, week out. It happens at international level. There's been worse, you know, instances of it at the Six Nations, which is like the flagship tournament for rugby probably in the world. So it's not going to get looked at, but it's just so unfair that neither of those it's so unfair that either of those instances wasn't reviewed, but the fact that they both were just absolutely baffles me. So I think it's a product of a very manipulative sort of TV rights system where, you know, the person in charge of the replays can dictate what is seen and what the crowd sees. It's a product of probably a refereeing team that weren't as experienced at this level as others were. Because, you know, fundamentally, I think if that's Luke Pearce and Wayne Barnes, they would have reviewed it. And so I'm getting really frustrated with it, but, you know, it's not going to change. That is what it is. I think we just have to accept that it's done and gone, and, you know, we can whinge about it on Twitter all we like. That's the way the game is. And unfortunately, it's just, you know, the integrity of the competition will continue to be undermined by French clubs being able to manipulate those kind of decisions when they're playing at home. I'm sure English clubs do it too. So I'd like to see it neutral on all fronts, because I'm sure we do it and people complain about it. But I don't think the ultimate result should cloud the fact that it's just an absolute disgrace. And, well, AJ McGinty said it better than anyone could have. Cover your ears if you don't like swearing. It's a fucking joke.
I mean, that might have been my one of my personal highlights of the match, the fact that he says that extremely loudly, definitely gets picked up by the ref's mic and immediately gets 10 minutes in the bin for his trouble. But, you know, fair enough. I must admit, I do disagree a little bit. I think, let's face it, if Camille Chatt had kicked Dan Dupreeh in the head, I don't think a French director of TV would, you know, manipulate the angle so it doesn't get shown. Like, I think realistically, you know, these things would get looked at. There's never an instance where they couldn't find an angle to show what was happening on the pitch. But I do understand your frustration, because there is an element of you need the referees and actually the TMOs, you know, to do a very strict job of policing what's happening on the field and making sure that everything gets picked up on. And maybe you do have to do that a little bit more when you're playing a French team in France. You know, I'm not saying there's no nefariousness to it, but whether or not it's a, you know, a grand French conspiracy. I don't necessarily believe.
No, I don't think it's a French conspiracy, mate. I think, but there's a pattern emerging, isn't there? There is. I'm not saying it's conspiracy. I'm not saying the French rugby board sit up there and go, we should do this. I'm saying that the refs aren't strong enough to push back on what clips they're shown. Those two are head contact. In the Prem, they are reviewed. In that game, they're head contact. They're not reviewed. It's just not right because World Rugby's framework says it should be reviewed. So it's not within the laws of the game for that not to be reviewed. The laws of the game explicitly state it. So I'm not going on about the French. I think the French thing had an impact, but fundamentally it's a very poor refereeing performance when you don't referee the laws and framework that World Rugby set down.
And I think that's the issue, which is maybe you should be, maybe, you know, the referee and TMO should be cognizant of the fact that it's a way you are playing a French team in France, and you have to be really shit hot on what's happening in terms of what's being shown or not being shown to you. And I don't necessarily think there was that. I think you can be frustrated at those refereeing decisions because I don't think the referees did enough to, I think, investigate the issues that mattered. And we saw that a little bit there was a lengthy TMO delay for whether or not De Klerk had slapped the ball down from the base of a ruck. You know, and that goes on for, you know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whereas something like the Schaap thing doesn't really get looked at. And I think that's I completely get why people are frustrated, and I think it's probably a poor reflection on the refereeing.
Yeah, and you know, similarly, the Manu Tuilagi try gets reviewed for obstruction for 2 minutes when no one thought there was any, but the pattern you see is that if there is a decision that favours the away team, a replay is shown in the ground, the jeers go up around the ground because it might favour the away team. And the problem on Sunday was that the refereeing team were bullied into reviewing those decisions. So that happened, didn't it? Because as you pointed out, De Klerk slapped down the potential obstruction on the try, which was both of which complete non-starters. So if they're bullied into reviewing those decisions, why are they not bullied into reviewing two pieces of head contact, which are the most dangerous part of the game for rugby players today? That's the simple question, isn't it?
Yes.
That is the thing you won't be able to answer, because fundamentally they got it. They were wrong not to review those two, and they were probably wrong to review the two that they did review.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, but I mean, we could go around in circles in here, and realistically, those decisions aren't necessarily the reasons why Sale lost the game. Although obviously they did have some impact. Just briefly, then, before we kind of look a bit further on with the European competition. You know, kind of what stood out to you from Sunday's game? I know, obviously, we just said, you know, the pack fronted up really well, the entire team fronted up really well, but, you know, who kind of stood out to you from an individual perspective?
Yeah, and I think it's right we talk about the positives because, you know, it's easy to get frustrated about those decisions, but I do think you're right. In the cold light of day, do we win that game if Racing have two yellow cards? No, we probably don't. Well, we certainly don't, because they still worked out to players and they still had an immense amount of quality. But yeah, there were some incredibly positive performances, I thought. Tom Curry in the first half especially was a nuisance and really showed his kind of class, just was involved everywhere. I thought it was one of De Klerk's best games in the Sale shirt, managing the territory. And I think the way we managed that territory was brilliant. We kept ourselves in their half as much as possible. I think Manu Tuilagi and Rob Dupree's defensive work was absolutely superb as well. I think the way they patrolled that centre channel and kept people bringing people up with them to shut down that space, it forced Racing into errors. And we're not used to seeing a team like Sale force a team like Racing into errors. The gulf between the sides is pretty big. And then Bevan Rod in the front row, I mean, just immense, wasn't it? Absolutely immense. To perform at that level and come back to the fact the guy's 22, I think, if that. You know, it's unbelievable for him to perform at that level in the European Champions Cup quarterfinal. It's just unheard of. And kind of, you know, he's obviously got a great pack around him, but the job in the scrum, I think the scrum is probably the weakest area of his game relative to the rest of it. It's not weak at all, but just, you know, the weakest, and it was basically the strongest area of his game on Sunday. And you made the point about Jono before as well. I thought that leadership in those circumstances was brilliant. And ably replaced by Ben Curry as well. And insight into the future with Ben Curry, obviously captaining for the last 20 minutes or so. So, you know, there were incredible performances all over the pitch. I don't know whether there was anyone else you wanted to pick out, but I do think it's just worth shouting out that team mentality. I know it's not really the question, but the mentality we showed all the whole game is just so encouraging for what the club is trying to build. And I still think in the bigger picture, the players are still buying into what Sanderson's doing. And you know, people are impatient, but let's remember where this project of Alex Sanderson's is. It's barely a year old. You know, there's so much more to come from this. So I think we have to be patient as fans, which is very hard to do sometimes because people say, oh, Steve Diamond gave you a top four team. But look at the way those players are talking in interviews and in you know, in press articles and that kind of thing. And look at the performances they're delivering and the level they're delivering those at. I still think there's a hell of a lot to come. So, you know, when your big performers are the likes of Bevan Rodd and Tom Curry and Ben Curry, then it's always encouraging for the future, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think, yeah, to a man, everyone had a pretty, you know, at worst, it was sort of a 6 or 7 out of 10. But yeah, you know, I think getting Tom Curry back, you know, there was a visible lift in the team. He does just so much work around the park. You know, between him, Ben Curry, like you said, Bevan Rodd, Manu Tuilagi, who I thought had a, you know, a really good game as well. You can just see that there are certain players that lift the ceiling of this team in a way that a few years ago it was when De Klerk was on the pitch versus off the pitch. And I think it is going to be difficult because, like you said, there's a few players there who aren't going to be around next season. No Diaga, who I thought, again, had a pretty solid game, given that he's the only lock in the team. You know, who else have we got? You know, De Klerk, obviously, is leaving. You know, there are going to be question marks about kind of who kind of steps up to kind of fill that, not necessarily positional impact, but kind of just the general on-field impact. And I thought, you know, what you saw from the likes of, yeah, the Currys and Bevan Rodd in another real pressure cooker, I think bodes really well for the maturity that they're starting to show. And like you said, I mean, you know, the Curry twins are only 24. You know, they've still got a long time to play. So it just kind of felt like this might be a bit of a seminal moment for the Sanderson era. You know, a real sort of like cauldron atmosphere and some of the, you know, young players stepped up. And just a word as well, Gus Waugh and Jack Metcalf obviously coming on for 10 minutes at the end of the game. You know, by that point, the game was out of sight. But, you know, coming in and doing a job and getting a few good touches in there as well. You know, I think that's massive for those two players who are, you know, young players who are on the periphery of the squad. And Tom Roebuck as well, you know, again, not overawed by the, you know, the situation. There's some really, really positive things I think you can take from Sunday, and hopefully it's the precursor for things to come. Speaking of which, obviously Sale's next game is not for 2 weeks now. You know, it's away at Wasps a week on Friday, so we're not going to touch too much on the Wasps game now. We'll do that next week. So I just want to spend the last few minutes here having a quick chat about the remainder of the Champions Cup, because obviously, although Sale are out of it, and it's very tempting to lose interest, you know, there are some massive semi-final fixtures coming up. So Alex, just wanted to get your sort of take on the two games this weekend. It's obviously Leinster Toulouse first up, and then Racing La Rochelle. Let's maybe start with Leinster Toulouse. I mean, who have you got in that one? Because I mean it's like Ireland versus France.
Yeah, you're right. It basically is. I think that's going to be the one I'm really excited to watch. Obviously, any kind of I always feel a bit more invested. A French on French clash is always a bit less exciting. I think it's the same with any kind of two teams from the same league. It's never quite as exciting, is it? Because they know each other so well. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. I think I've got Leinster for this one and the way they're playing. But I mean, Toulouse are just, not only are they so good, but mentally they're so strong, and you know they can deal with anything. You look at that Munster Toulouse game. So I actually didn't watch that game because I was at my mate's wedding, which is why I didn't go to Paris. And I did sort of sneakily put BT Sport on during the speeches just to watch the penalty shootout, because someone texted me and told me it had gone to penalty shootout, and I thought, oh no, I won't miss this. But the kind of mentality for them to just nail all their kicks is just like, it's a proper European mentality. It's great to see Toulouse back at the top table. So I think Toulouse could do it, but I do think Leinster are a very, very good team. And to go and beat Leicester and beat them pretty comfortably, you know, wipe them away in the first half, I think shows what they're about. So I'm on the fence with this one. I really can't call it. But no, actually, I think Toulouse are going to do it. I think French rugby is in a much better place than any other league. So I've changed my mind. And I think, yeah, Toulouse's mentality, I just think they're so ready. And if they know that if they can win a penalty shootout, you know, maybe this tournament's meant for them once again, I suppose. So, yeah, I'll have Toulouse in the first one. What about you?
I think this is probably the two... Maybe the two best teams in Europe, maybe even the world, playing each other, you know, on current form and the talent in the squad. It's a shame, actually, that this isn't the final, but I genuinely don't know. It's so hard to call. They're so evenly matched. I think, I was going to say Toulouse because they've just won away at the Aviva. I'm proving they can do it, but then Leinster are a better team than Munster, and I'll shade it to Leinster just by home advantage. But I mean, there's going to be so little in it. This is going to be an absolutely cracking contest. And speaking of cracking contest, you know, the following game is Racing versus La Rochelle, maybe the third or fourth best teams in Europe at the moment. Obviously. A strange quirk. This one's getting played in Nantes instead of at home in Paris for Racing because of a scheduling conflict. But I mean, again, where do you see this one going? You know, Racing or La Rochelle?
I think Racing have obviously got the momentum after recent weeks in the league, but I do think there's a bit of a European. There's such a focus on the European competition from Racing that I just wonder whether. Wonder whether that's going to pressurise them. And I don't know, it's really hard this one because I don't like Racing because they knocked us out this season, and I don't like La Rochelle because they knocked us out last season. But I think it's going to be La Rochelle. I think we showed that you can worry Racing and you can harry them. And yeah, we're a good team, but we're not a La Rochelle or a Toulouse or a Leinster. And I think, you know, we showed how to play against them, and that's to get up in their face. And the thing is that La Rochelle won't let up. They'll absolutely melt them at the scrum. They'll win penalties off that. And then if all you have to do is get in their face in defence and sort of, you know, cause a bit of chaos, they'll drop the ball. You're back to a scrum, you know, and then you melt them again. So I think on forward power alone, La Rochelle for me. I can see Racing doing it, but... I think Finn Russell's had his good week against, well, he's a good 40 minutes against us, so he's probably due a few weeks of being average again, isn't he?
I don't agree with all this Finn Russell slander, but I think I was going to say Racing, but I think you've actually just convinced me that it'll be La Rochelle because, yeah, if you don't have that home advantage, plus the fact that, like you said, La Rochelle, if we were able to turn the screw against Racing scrum, you'd assume La Rochelle, who did the same to us last year, should be able to do that to Racing. So, okay, yeah, you've convinced me. I think it'll be La Rochelle, Leinster in the final, and obviously you think it'll be Toulouse, La Rochelle, a repeater last year in the final. So, I mean, regardless of whether we're right or wrong, two absolutely fantastic games of rugby to look forward to this weekend. And then I guess the final thing on the agenda for this week is just very briefly, obviously, since our last podcast, it's been officially confirmed that Rohan Janse van Rensburg will be leaving the club at the end of the season to join the Sel Sea Sharks of the Durban Parish. I was gutted about this one. I'll just be upfront about it. You know, Rohan's been one of my absolute favourite players to watch as a Sel fan in the last, well, I mean, in the last, you know, 20 years, realistically. There are so few players who could kind of do what he could do, especially when he sort of first burst onto the scene in that 17-18 season. Obviously, his sort of impact on the team maybe diminished a little bit over time, and you could argue we never really saw him at his absolute best, which I still to this day think is sort of, you know, he could have been up there with a Damien Diallande type playing consistently for the Springboks if you know, maybe injuries had gone his way, etc. But Alex, you know, kind of, you know, your thoughts on Rohan's legacy, you know, at Sale. You know, he's been here for on and off for five seasons, obviously a bit of a cult hero. And yeah, I mean, what do you think the legacy for Rohan will be at the club?
Yeah, I think it's a really positive one. I think he's shown so much sort of game-breaking talent in his time here, especially recently, actually. It stings a bit more, doesn't it? Because recently he's been so good and he's had a really good run without injuries, which has been massive. You know, obviously there's been a lot of times where trying to keep Rohan playing week to week to week has been quite difficult. And I think we probably shouldn't forget that if we're trying to console ourselves. But I'm with you. I'm really gutted about it because I think we talk so much about pace on this pod that people are probably sick of it by now. But he has got that, and he's also got power to go with it. And he's really developed his sort of handling game and his running game, and he's slotted right into our defensive system a lot of the time. There's still, you know, he still has that habit of rushing up and leaving gaps. So, you know, I think it's just a shame because I think he could be such a good player for us, and it is a shame to see him go. There's obviously salary cap implications. He's obviously, you know, there's returning home implications. You've seen it so much in COVID with players wanting to go home. I think it's been referenced, but obviously George Ford coming back to Manchester is part of that. So we shouldn't be surprised when guys who, you know, come and lived in Manchester for 5 years, you know, Rohan's been here for five years in total, I think, doesn't he? So he's done a long stint of not a very long life in Manchester, away from home, away from friends and family. So there's all those parts of it to feed in. But yeah, on a purely rugby terms, I think we are a better team with him, obviously. And we've seen getting towards the best of him recently. And I think that's going to really sting. So obviously, best of luck to him. He's such a lovely bloke. And he's really sort of embedded himself in the culture and you know, of the team, that is, and really bought into it. So it's been really positive having him here. And that probably makes it even more of a shame that he's going. You know, he's just one of those players who is playing with a smile on his face. He's been such a good ambassador for the club, and he's also been hard and fierce and fast on the field and given us some great rugby moments. So I think for that you have to thank him and wish him the best. But obviously, naturally, as Sale fans, I'm with you. I'm gutted he's going. The only saving grace is that we knew it was coming and we had some time to prepare ourselves. So you know, obviously it was rumoured for a while, but I still don't think that makes it any easier, and I think he'll definitely be missed.
I think ultimately, as long as he didn't go to Gloucester, you know, he'd go with our best wishes. So, but then again, it sounds like he, of all places, Gloucester would have been the last place he wanted to go to. So fair enough. And like you said, you know, the chance to go back home, and realistically, what the Sharks are building in Durban is impressive. You know, they've obviously got that private equity money. They've brought, you know, Coalisi and some other Springboks over to the club. I can see why at this stage of his career, Rohan is probably thinking that this certainly does my Springbok chances no harm, and actually brings him closer to home as well. So, yeah, goes with our best wishes. And my fondest Rohan memory, I just want to make sure I get this in there, was he was on the bench for his debut sale, and I remember being in the south stand, and he came out to warm up with all the other players. This is when he'd just come from South Africa and the Lions, and genuinely he looked like a prop. I had to point him out to my old man and say, yeah, that's the centre that we signed. And my dad said, I thought he was the young loosehead we've just brought up from the academy, because he was so massive. And admittedly, he did slim down over his last couple of years, but when he came onto the pitch, you just thought, hang on a second, how on earth is someone like that going to play in the back? So, and then all of a sudden, he was running over people and running around people like they weren't even there. So just a really fun, unique player to watch. And yeah, he's a bit of a cult hero at Sale. So that's the pod for this week. Thank you to everyone for listening. Once again, you know, I hope everyone had a fantastic time in Paris. It looked absolutely mint. Thank you very much for everyone who's been sort of engaging with us on Twitter. And yeah, we'll speak to you next week when we have a look at the return to Premiership action against Wasps. Alex, anything from you to sort of wrap things up this week?
No, I'll end up going on a rant again. Just thank you all for listening. Yeah, massive shout out to the Sale fans in Paris. It was superb, and hopefully we can take it back to the AJ Bell for the remainder of this season and into next. And hopefully by next season we'll have a stadium purchase under our belt, and we can turn it into as good a fan experience as Racing looked to be.